When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week as we are hurtling headlong into summer. Congratulations. If you've made it this far, fellow conspiracy realists, longtime listeners, you will know this is one of our favorite parts of the week. It's time for some strange news. We dig through the chaos of the world and the world within and the world without, and we find the stories that either haven't made it to the news or haven't gotten the scrutiny they deserve. We're going to talk a little bit about the ring wraiths that run the Supreme Court of the United States. We're going to talk a little bit about biblical apocrypha, and we're going to talk a little bit about true crime. We can't wait to bring these stories to you. Maybe our first story starts over in New Zealand. We've got a lot of listeners in New Zealand, many of whom are fans of religious history, many of whom are fans of biblical lore. And Noel, I think that's where our first story takes us, because not all Bibles are the same, are they?
No, they're not. The nature of translation and printing and distribution makes the whole trajectory of the Holy Bible a very interesting one. As we know, the King James version of the Bible is the one that largely kind of proliferated far and wide, and inherent in that translation is, you know, some political leanings kind of King James the First, who was responsible for, you know, this whole giant boom in printing of the Bible. He essentially, under his rule, encouraged or perhaps decreed even anyone that owned a printing press to, you know, stop what they were doing and just print copies of the Bible. One such printer made a grievous error in that printing run. It was in 1631 in London, over a year, or roughly a full year after the King James Bible was published, that this error was discovered. And a very angry Charles I demanded satisfaction. What was this typo, you might ask? What could possibly create such a kerfuffle? Well, it was enough of a doozy that this particular version of the Bible has earned a delightfully bawdy nickname, I guess, the Wicked Bible. It is because in the printing of Exodus 20:14, it was discovered that a very crucial word was left out of one of the Ten Commandments, the one about adultery specifically. The seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, they left out a pretty crucial word. It was the word not. So in this version of the Bible, there's basically a line item in what is meant to be the most important rules, you know, of all of creation, of all living things to follow, completely flipping the meaning of it. So it's essentially encouraging people to commit adultery. Thou shalt commit adultery is what it says. And you can go to an article in the Washington Post called The Bible Museum's Wicked Bible, Thou Shalt Commit Adultery by Deneen L. Brown. To get a little bit more of a rundown, and actually has a pull from the printing, and it's got an image of like being measured, and it's an artifact in and of itself, this misprint. I love the idea of a famous misprint. I can't really think of too many others off the top of my head, if any. I don't know. Do you guys? He has to give any like big gaffes in an edition. I mean, it would have to be something so huge like this that would be such a massive embarrassment for a, you know, central figure that commanded, you know, essentially hijacked everyone's printing presses to create a thing that he so firmly believed in. But I can't really think of any.
There are multiple examples that sometimes become the obscure origins of various conspiratorial thoughts or schools of thought rather than, authoritative things. Maybe one of the most common experiences for people in the modern day would be misprints or misfires in coins or in paper currency, right? That's an authoritative text that gets mistranslated, or accidents happen, and then those accidents can seem as though they are calculated, as though they are purposely created. Now, Noel, I hear that people are calling this the Wicked Bible. Have people taken this seriously? Like over time, has this misprint been used or leveraged by opportunists to seem as though the Christian God is in fact championing the idea of adultery? Or is it sort of an historical curiosity?
I think it's a bit of a historical curiosity. I'm sure by the way, backtrack before I finish that thought. I mentioned that the King James version of the Bible was the big massive to-do printing of the Bible. This was about 30 years after the King James version of the Bible, this was overseen by King Charles I, who I believe directly succeeded King James, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not 100% on that, but it has to be pretty close. So he would have been carrying on the legacy of the King James Bible. And it was, you know, a full year, to answer your question, Ben, before the misprint was even discovered. And I found this on Reddit, the offbeat Reddit thread, which you recommended, Ben. It's quite good. And some of the chatter on the thread was people kind of pointing to this as an example of the fact that Christians don't always read every word of the Bible with that much specificity. So, you know, kind of a biggie to go unnoticed for a full year is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, this section is talked about often, whether it's a Bible or a Torah, this section of Exodus where it's, you know, the Ten Commandments that Moses had on the tablets.
That's what I'm saying.
That were, you know, that God inscribed himself. So, like, this is a big deal. And if God is commanding everybody to do that, it seems like somebody would notice, because I'm assuming they're reading it during regular, you know, whether it's a Torah or Bible study or a sermon. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that some rabbi or pastor was just preparing for that week's thing and just reading it through, even copied it down, but just in their mind, because they've read that passage so many times, it doesn't even say thou shall commit adultery on the page. To them, in their mind, it just says thou shall not commit adultery. Until everybody who's got one of those books in front of them opens it.
I love it.
They all go, wait a second.
I love it. It's like when young Christian kids start reading the Book of Songs, which is super racy, right? And they're like, how am I reading this in a church? I also love the idea of, well, love is a strong word. I am fascinated by the idea of a maybe not the best religious figure saying, this is the way I can spin stuff. You know, God said, you have to do it. You have to commit adultery. It wasn't me.
It's right here. Look, it's in the book.
Right there. It's in black and white. And guys, I'm burying the lead a little bit because I felt like it was necessary to go, you know, into what this thing was. I'd never heard of it, and I think it's super fascinating. But the news peg of this is that there's only like 11 of these remaining because King Charles was pissed. He revoked these printers' licenses, these printers, Robert Barker and Martin Lucas. They were summoned to appear before the king. They were excoriated publicly. They were stripped of their licenses. They had a 300-pound fine, which back in those days would have been a life ruining amount.
Yeah, it's
of
literally
money.
Pounds of flesh. Kind of 300 pounds of flesh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Held over their heads. It was apparently eventually relinquished, but the texts were ordered to be rounded up and destroyed. And there are apparently roughly only 20 or so in circulation. One of them is on display in that Bible museum that I mentioned. This one is in Washington, D.C. It's called the Bible Museum, and it apparently costs about $500 million. The facility is being touted as a new $500 million Museum of the Bible, which opened in Washington, D.C., and that was back in 2017. So that is apparently the best Bible museum game in town. But another version of this has been discovered in New Zealand, of all places, in Christchurch. So let's see. Chris Jones, who's an associate professor in medieval studies at the university and fellow of the Society of Antiquaries in London, said on Monday, it's a mystery, it's fascinating, and it's made its way halfway around the world. The University of Canterbury in Christchurch received this Bible when it was discovered all the way back in 2018. But they decided to keep it quiet so that they could verify it and research it and make sure that the groundwork was laid for it to be preserved. Because I don't know, it sounds to me like this is the kind of thing that certain religious zealots don't want to exist or would be like upset by the very existence of. But a student of Jones, the medieval studies guy from London, actually found a copy of the Bible at an estate sale. And it was owned by a bookbinder who had passed away, Don Hampshire, who came to New Zealand in the late 1950s from the United Kingdom, and he died in Christchurch there in New Zealand in 2009. And that is the estate sale that the student found this at. It doesn't say how much they paid for it, but I don't believe it was acknowledged that it was something like absurdly rare or remarkable. Jones' former student told him she believed it was a wicked Bible, but he was, quote, very disbelieving because these are super, super rare items. And then they were able to confirm that is what it is. There's also one more very gaffy misprint in it. Let's see. Yeah, so in Deuteronomy 5:24, it was supposed to proclaim the, quote, greatness, and this is like sort of Old English adjacent language that would have been spelled greatnesse of God, but instead the Wicked Bible, instead of saying greatness, it says the word great ass, like hyphenated, A-S-S-E.
Finally, right?
The Yeah, I know. The full sentence would have been, and he said, behold, the Lord our God hath shewed us his glory and his great ass.
Yeah, it reminds me of the, some great satirical websites or algorithms I've seen where and did an automated search find throughout the Bible. So it replaces certain terms with you guys instead of instead of like humans or whatever. It says, I'll have to find it one day, but conspiracy realist, send it in. You know what I'm talking about. It's you can find any number of these that are sort of, they're sort of satirizing a long history, a hidden history of satire that exists in monastic subcultures, right? Like we all know friars and various orders of monks kind of got down when they were illuminating all those scripts. And that's why you can look at handwritten manuscripts of biblical lore and see all sorts of kind of in the margin illustrations that were clearly someone having fun and then later became canon to successive generations. This sounds like an honest misprint, not a purposeful misprint, but we also have to realize before the age of the internet, printed word was taken, pardon my wordplay here, as gospel. So if there was a misprint in like a, I know Matt, shake your head, but I'm right. But like if there was a misprint, intentional or accidental, then there was a very high likelihood, especially in the early days of the printed word and the handwritten word, that it would be taken seriously. A lot of jokes over the great game of historical telephone become treated as truth.
Now, that's a good point. There is a mention in this Washington Post article that some folks have conjectured this could have been a bit of a gag. It makes me think of some of the little secret things that are hidden in some Disney movies that likely would have been the result of rogue animators or editors or voice, you know, Foley artists or whatever. Like in Aladdin, they can very clearly hear in the early VHS versions a scene where Prince Aladdin says, good teenagers take off their clothes. Like it's just there. I'm not making this. This is a thing. This exists. Like, I don't know. They must have gotten rid of it for the DVD reissues and Blu-rays and subsequent things. But I remember as a kid, someone told me about it, a friend, and I watched it over and over again. I was just thought it was the most remarkable thing I'd ever heard. In those days, printing would have been taken incredibly seriously and overseen with a very heavy level of rigor. And if it had just been the one, right? The commandment, which by the way, I mean, that's just such a biggie, you know, like as complex as like biblical text is, that is a one shot, you know, bullet point, clear as day, declaration of a thing. And it left out the most important word. And then the whole God's got a good, great ass thing. I want to say it in Al Pacino's voice, but I'm not going to go there. That also seems like if it's, you know, one thing maybe would have been a goof. Two, at that level of specificity and like, you know, the way it changes the meaning feels a little intentional to me.
If we're going for Pacino, it would be like, what are you carrying all those bricks for, Kevin? I'm a humanist.
Well, I can't remember who I can't remember who
Bill
does
Hader.
The impression. No, I think it's like God's got a great ass. You know, like that's the
Well, read your Bibles carefully.
Read your Bibles carefully. Study them chapter and verse and make sure you're not dealing with a weird bait and switch version because you might be practicing your golden rule completely incorrectly.
It's the best example I've heard in a long time that shows exactly the problems that we've illustrated in the past in translation and printing. If you've got a story that is so old and in the game of telephone that you mentioned there, Ben, it really just is. This is a really great example. one thing goes wrong, and now everybody who follows moving forward thinks that was the right thing, and now everybody's doing the wrong thing. Wow, that's crazy.
It's a nutty one. And I didn't know a thing about it, so I learned something. I hope you all did too. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more stuff to learn from the strange news.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts season two of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we are back, and we are jumping to a story coming to us from the Bahamas via the Miami Herald. Here's basically the story, and then we'll jump into more details. In the Sandals Emerald Bay Resort, that is our place. This is in the island of Great Exuma, G-R-E-A-T-E-X-U-M-A.
Wait, isn't that where Firefest was?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know where Firefest was.
I think it was on Exuma. It was on one of the islands called Exuma. I mean, there might be a great one and a minor one, but I'm almost nearly positive that's where Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it must be different than the Fire one, because this is a large island that has a major resort on it. So we're in this major resort called Emerald Bay, and it is Friday, May 6th. It is in the morning. Hotel staff at this resort discover one unresponsive person inside one of the resort's villas. Then they find two more unresponsive people in a different villa. Then the Royal Bahamas Police Force is notified almost immediately. The police force begins investigating. And according to the Miami Herald, quote, in the first villa, officers found a dead man on the ground in a bedroom with, quote, no signs of trauma. In the second villa, they found a dead man slumped against a wall in a bathroom. and a dead woman on the bed.
Mm. Any indication of the manner of death?
Well, not at first. At least when the first report started coming out, there was a CNN article and a couple other articles that were coming from that were giving the absolute smallest amount of knowledge. Just three people found dead. Then immediately it was known that there was a fourth victim of something that was rushed to a hospital in Nassau and then ended up being airlifted to Miami for further medical attention. So it appears that this was some kind of medical emergency that was going on, or three people at least were murdered. Nobody knows, right? So then the police continued to investigate, and they found that the two individuals that were found in the second villa, the man and the woman, they had both showed signs of convulsion, and they continued examining those bodies, but they found no signs of trauma. So convulsion, but trauma, which means it seems as though there was something occurring internally inside those people that caused their deaths. Then, you guys, the police learn that that couple that showed convulsion, no trauma, they had felt unwell, they felt sick, and they went to a local area hospital there in the Bahamas, or at least a medical facility, sought treatment because they felt unwell, and then went on back to their resort. And next thing anyone else knows, they're discovered dead.
Wait, so they went to a medical professional and they checked in, and that those docs or those RNs didn't clock anything that would make them impatient. They said, just go on your way. IN patient, by the way, not
Yeah, exactly. Patient. Yeah, you're feeling unwell. It's probably this or that. Maybe here's some, you know, medicine to feel a little better, but at least as far as we know right now, they were not kept overnight for observation. They weren't kept for any other reason. So they were just sent home. The office of the prime minister there in the Bahamas confirmed that all three people were American tourists. One of the victims or the people that died, it's tough to say victims because we don't know what happened. One of the people that passed was possibly identified by this person's son, because according to this person named Austin, who was speaking with ABC News, his mother is the fourth person who was flown to Miami for medical treatment. And his father is the single man that was found dead in the room. I'm not going to give the full names or anything like that. I don't want to put their whole world out there. You can read, there's an ABC News story that you can read if you want to learn all of that. It's a sad story. They were celebrating their anniversary there in the Bahamas when whatever occurred. I want to jump quickly to the statement from the Sandals Resort, because this is the kind of thing, it's no really reason to read it. You can imagine what a resort would say when something terrible like this happens, right? Something bad happened. We're investigating it. We'll share everything in a timely manner that we learn. And we're taking care of our guests. And, you know, this is a tragedy. That's basically what they said. I won't read you the whole thing. You can read it, though. Sandals put out a statement.
Sandals. Michael Scott's favorite place in the world. This is the Firefest Island, by the way. There is a like resort there. And then there's like swimming pigs and stuff. It's a whole thing. This is absolutely the Firefest Island. Not that it matters. I just had to put that to bed for anyone screaming at their radio.
Got it. Okay, so Firefest occurred here. I just want to give you one more piece of information that I've got here coming from Fox 40 in Jackson, but I believe it's one of those reposts. It's tough for me to track down where this story actually originated from, but it's a statement from that same person, Austin. And the statement was that when his mother awoke in Miami, like kind of came out of it, whatever she was dealing with, she was unable to move. So she was at least temporarily paralyzed. Now, that's a statement that I can't really confirm. I can't tell you like what that meant or how long that state of paralysis existed or whether she came out of it, because we just don't have the information right now. But I'm just adding that to the small amount of information that we do know at this point. And I would give you just a couple of things that the resort is looking into. What are the possible reasons that all these people fell ill and then did pass? Immediately, my mind goes to food poisoning. What about you guys? What do you think?
I mean, that would be one of the most, unfortunately, one of the most common ailments that people will encounter in that part of the world. If they're not from that part of the world, there could also be the possibility of bacterial infection, mm-hmm. of a viral. It's tough to guess, especially given the limited information we have now, right? Like there's clearly some sort of internal cause, but pending an autopsy, it's tough. There are a lot of possibilities here. I'm with you though, Matt. Food poisoning seems like, or at least like bacteria or virus transmitted somehow through water, food intake, those seem like very common candidates.
Agreed. So the authorities are working with the resort to look at those exact kind of things, Ben. The water heater that's present in both of the villas, just to see if there's any substances in that water heater, any kind of bacteria or other thing that could cause an infection. The air conditioner, to see if something had become or could have become airborne that affected them. The gas supply, so the propane supply there, because gas leaks could cause something really bad like that. Another thing that jumped to my mind was carbon monoxide poisoning. And again, you wouldn't really know until you get that autopsy. But there are in these villas where there's not a ton of cars and other things that generally would have carbon monoxide as an exhaust. So it's probably very unlikely that occurred. I just quickly was going to go. I started going over the symptoms of things like food poisoning, carbon monoxide. What was the other one? General gas leak poisoning. So natural gas leaks that occur in your house. And guys, I didn't realize that all of these things share so many symptoms. And I don't know, I was giving myself a little anxiety thinking about it. I didn't know a gas leak in your home, let's say like a natural gas leak from one of the pipes that's in my house, it was built in the 1950s. If there's a gas leak, hopefully I would smell that gas because there is stuff added to it to get me and anyone else to smell it. So we'll be aware that there's a gas leak. But if I didn't notice, or if I was asleep when it occurred and enough had gone into my, you know, body and I'd taken in enough, all the same things, headache, dizziness, nausea, eye and throat irritation, fatigue, breathing problems, all of this stuff, it's shared with carbon monoxide poisoning. It's shared with food poisoning, except with food poisoning, you get more of the ejections of things like vomit and yeah.
So diplomatic. More of the ejections. Yeah. I love it. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And Matt, this remains a mystery unless an autopsy occurs, unless a public autopsy occurs.
Yeah. And it should be happening today as we record this on Monday, May 9th. At least the thought is that autopsy results will be back by today at some point. If they're not back right now as a recording, I haven't checked the news in a few minutes. But anyway, this is just something to keep in mind when you're traveling anywhere, no matter where you're from and where you're going. If you're in a different environment, a different location, just be aware of your water and your food. Make sure you cook that food all the way.
Yes. And even as people who are clearly aware of the problems posed by plastics, it may be in your best interest to drink bottled water when you're in an unfamiliar part of the world.
No matter how luxurious it is.
Yes. Just so.
I know we're going to finish here. I just want to give you guys a quick personal story. It's kind of gross, but I once traveled to a Caribbean place. Let's say I'm not going to name where it was, but it was at one of these resorts that was all inclusive and a great place. It was for an event, a life event, and everything was wonderful. The food was amazing. But then I got on the plane heading home and I started feeling really sick and I just couldn't handle anything. I was dizzy. I was sleepy and I had a fever on the plane. I developed a fever, got home and found out that I was in fact dealing with some severe, severe food poisoning. And thank goodness I got to a doctor in time. I'm still here. But it was bad. It was very bad.
Did you get some involuntary lessons in two-step dancing, or did you get what'd you call them earlier? Some ejections?
There were ejections, yes.
coronal mass in nature, or
so metonal mass ejections rather than coronal. Oh boy. Well, yeah, man, you're here. You're here. I think I remember this story. And for anybody who is unaware, Matt's off-air retelling of this is amazing.
No, nope.
Actually,
it's bad. But yeah, just a reminder, to, you know, be safe. And this really terrible, tragic thing. Hopefully it is something that is just fixable and won't happen again. But it definitely makes me nervous about doing that kind of thing where you're just giving total control of your environment over to a company that, you know, is supposed to be really good at taking care of people. And that's true in all of the hospitality industry. So it's just weird to think about, right? When you go to a hotel, like, well, I'm in their hands now. Hope all the infrastructure works and there are no gas leaks and my food's going to be cooked. It's weird to think about. All right, that's it. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more strange news.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
And And we have returned with one last piece of strange news. This is a hot button issue for some people. It is a matter of sanctity. For other people, it is a matter of personal threat. For everyone listening today, regardless of your ideology, this is a matter of great import. Recently, something unprecedented occurred with the Supreme Court of the United States. One of their decisions was leaked before it went public and official. So, brief side note, if you are not from the United States or if you live in the U.S. and you've ever had to kind of explain the Supreme Court to your friends who are not from the U.S., sadly, one of the best ways to do it is through analogy. And I increasingly have resorted to describing the Supreme Court of the U.S. in the following way. There are nine individuals wrapped in black in their appearances. There's no real mechanism to take them away from their jobs, and they pursue what they see as their own aims. Theoretically, it's the law of the land. Anyway, long story short, if you want to explain the Supreme Court to your friends who are not from the U.S., or if you are not from the U.S. and you want to understand the Supreme Court in this country, the best comparison is sadly the Ringwraiths from Tolkien. They don't run for elections. There are nine of them. There's always around.
In the sound.
Yes.
It's like static. They're cool.
And no man.
Spooky boys.
No man may end them.
Spoiler alert.
Right. Well, not quite.
That's true. But, they say that for the whole time.
Right. And Tolkien was almost certainly not referencing the Supreme Court, nor was he, by the way, referencing nuclear weaponry in Lord of the Rings. Just a nerd fact. He was not aware of atomic power while he was writing it. But recently, this place, the Supreme Court, had a leak. They had a whistleblower. This has not happened in the modern history of this court. Someone burned down their career to get the word out to the U.S. public about a landmark decision, which will go officially public in June, to revoke one of the most hot-button decisions of recent U.S. history, or recent U.S. judicial history, which was a case called Roe versus Wade. I should say is a case called Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade was a decision from a previous Supreme Court in 1973 that ruled people identifying as women had a constitutional right to choose to have an abortion. It was pro-choice legislation. It said something that many libertarians in the audience today can agree with, which is your body is your own. And when this leaked, there was, center me here, Paul, there was a storm across the internet, across jurisprudence, across the performative propaganda of U.S. politics. The idea here launched toward two narratives of conspiracy. The first conspiracy theory being one that came from within the court itself. Current Chief Justice, as we record this, Roberts, has focused on finding the source of the leak. He is greatly offended by the idea that this institution would have that sort of transparency, especially in a non-consensual manner, especially toward the public, which has no way to elect these officials, nor any direct mechanism for impeaching them. The second conspiracy theory is one that its proponents will tell you, has been at work for several decades, which is to remove the right for people to have that kind of, you know, liberty or dominion over their own bodies. And then to further, the argument goes, remove other rights that are in theory guaranteed to American citizens. We're talking about stuff like same-sex marriage. We're talking about stuff like even interracial marriage, which before the Loving case, let's recall, was also considered a criminal offense. At this point, it's tough to tell how things will go. And this is, I argue, strange news, because despite the fact that it has been widely reported, it is still kind of hinging on history. The U.S. and the world, which is watching, are not sure. No one is sure how the pendulum will swing or which way the cards will fall. Before we continue, I'd like to ask you guys, just on the show here, before we go to our fellow conspiracy realists, how did you encounter this news? What were your initial reactions?
I think it was a text from you.
To us.
Oh, no, yeah. I did. No, it's true. Keep it in.
After hours while I was watching my stories. And let me tell you.
It was late night.
Made it a little hard to focus on Saul Goodman. You know, I mean, it was, all encompassing. It's the kind of news that makes your mind just go reeling. And then it starts to, you feel it in your body and you just want to punch something, you know, Fred Durst style. It's just, I don't know, man. I just can't stand the politicization of the Supreme Court, and the, they'll argue day in and day out that's not what this is. But the ruling has stood for 50 years, and it took somebody to, you know, implant some clearly politicized justices into that body to make this happen. It was a goal, a stated goal, and then here it is.
I don't know. The strange thing to me is trying to square those monotonous, terrible hearings that happen every time there's a new Supreme Court nominee. And every time, people just handling a barrage of questions from all these senators and just saying, you know, almost all the way across the board, yeah, it's important to look back at previous decisions. And those are, you know, for the lack of a better term, sacred. We got to do that. We should uphold that stuff, use that as our guide. Almost everybody that gets actually approved says that. Seems a little weird.
It does. It does seem a little bit odd. But, you know, unfortunately, in this country, since its inception, there has been a discrepancy between the honeymoon period of campaigning, right, and the de facto practice period of action. Want to give a special shout out to Politico, especially the journalists Josh Gerstein and Alexander Ward, who on the 2nd of May released the article. And thank you all if you were listening for not putting this behind a paywall. It reads simply, Supreme Court has voted to overturn abortion rights, draft opinion shows. So what these journalists and their sources in Politico found was what's called a draft majority opinion. You don't have to be on the Supreme Court, nor do you have to be a lawyer, nor a judge to understand what draft majority opinion means. Picture it like the weekend before you have to turn in a group project at school, and you're the one who writes the rough draft of what you and your cohort will present. And there might be some edits, there might be some revisions, there might be some people who want to style on their, you know, pet project within your group manifesto, but overall, you're on the same page. And that's the scary thing for a lot of people who read this initially when it hit in early May. It shows a strong ideological, I would argue, objection to standing law, which was again confirmed by the Supreme Court. There just happened to be different justices on the court in 1973. Here is a quote that I would like to read from the Politico article by Justice Samuel Alito, the author of this, the one running point. Quote, Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. Its reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision had damaging consequences. And far from bringing about a national settlement of the abortion issue, Roe and Casey have inflamed debate and deepened division. Somewhat double-thinky, Orwell would say. I am tempted to agree. I'd like to also point out, just to emphasize what you said earlier, Matt, the idea of performative statements during the evaluations of several recently nominated or recently appointed justices, several of whom said that they considered Roe v. Wade standing law, right? Standing precedent, said they would not interfere with it, ended up doing exactly what they said they would not do. Noel, this reminds me of our story at the top of this segment. Maybe there was a small misprint. Maybe it was like, thou shalt commit adultery. Maybe when they said, we will not overturn Roe versus Wade, what they meant to say was, we will.
Yep, misprint. That's what this is. This is actually the minority opinion.
It's the minority opinion of the United States public, that's for sure. About 60-something, a little less than 70% of people in the United States support the idea of people having that kind of liberty over their own bodies. This now has been red meat for a lot of media outlets. Again, when you're hearing this, there will be any number of hot takes. There will be any number of echo chambers in this regard. And I think the important thing to remember is that statistically speaking, someone you know has had this procedure done. It is a statistical certitude. They may not have talked to you about it. The reasons don't matter. It's not your business. It's not our own, but our business, our duty as residents of the United States is to hold these institutions accountable. And for quite a while, the Supreme Court has been an issue of controversy. Its existence, its decisions, especially the question of whether or not it is politicized. For people who felt that Roe versus Wade was on the chopping block, for people who felt there was indeed an intergenerational conspiracy to overthrow this decision, to take away your rights, if you're hearing this now, that's what it's about. If you side with those people, then this seems like confirmation of a conspiracy theory. Now, there are many of us in the audience today who would personally never make that sort of decision for ourselves, for our own bodies. And that is right. That is just. That is you. However, there are 323 something million other people, almost 70% of whom say, I should not be in charge of a stranger's, you know, internal mechanisms. And this, I don't know, it bothers me because I didn't expect it to become conspiratorial so quickly, but we cannot overemphasize this. Someone burned their career down. They did this. They are likely, if I had to guess, and I'm guessing, I'm not pulling any like Ben with some underground sources or whatever. I'm guessing entirely on my own speculation. This was probably a clerk working for one of the judges identifying as conservative. And for some internal calculus of their own, they put the word out. They put their sense of ethical responsibility over their career. So regardless of where you fall personally on the line of this specific issue, I think it is illustrative of the way decisions get made in that institution without the input of the American public. Does that sound too out there, or is that?
No, that's, there is no input of the, I mean, the input, I guess, comes in the form of like voting for a president who can then appoint, you know, people to the court who share your values. But, you know, we see that process get politicized and bastardized all the time. I mean, wasn't it McConnell that blocked an Obama appointment because of the decorum of it all or something like that, when there should have easily been, he should have had the opportunity to appoint who he wanted, but then there was this, all of a sudden, this argument about, oh no, it goes against protocol, you're a lame duck and you shouldn't be able to do it. And then, of course, in the Trump administration, they rammed two appointments through, and then argue that it's not politicized, but it so clearly is. And you know, there was that whole news item about the short list of justices that Trump was pursuing were people that would definitely actively, based on their actions, overturn Roe v. Wade. So it's clear choices leading to an outcome.
And I, you know, that's a good point, Noel. I would also like to point to some historical context that has been missed in these conversations. First, yes, there is a deflection move on the part of the court and on the part of Congress that appointed the current majority of the court. And that deflection move is to clutch pearls and say how egregious it is for there to be a leak in SCOTUS. That's not the story, though. The story should be the institution's decisions, the fact that if you listen to this show and you reside in the United States, you're paying these people. You know what I mean? Do you want to say? And then there's another, like, a long historical context that's being missed often. Just to be very objective here, a quick level set, as they call it in corporate America. You know the person who wrote the opinion on Roe v. Wade back in 1973? Anybody remember his name? I do. It was Justice Harry Blackmun, Republican, appointed by then President Nixon. Look, it's not as if, it's not as if there is some ancient continuing division between the, you know, the political left and the political right. What's happening is people are being taken for a ride by powerful interests, and to truly understand what is happening, regardless of which conspiracy theory one might ascribe to, there's a lot of information that is not being given its, I don't want to say its day in court. Its day in the court of public opinion, maybe, in the way things are being reported. And, you know, we have had, to be quite honest with you, we have had over the years, many people, many of your fellow listeners who have written in with their own experiences regarding very troubling things. And with this case right now, we have to ask ourselves as a group, not just Matt, Noel, Mission Control, Doc, and yours truly, we have to ask ourselves what this means. Is this the beginning of a slippery slope, right? Is this the beginning of, as some people put it on Twitter, a Handmaid's Tale becoming reality rather than science fiction? It's very troubling. You know, if you're listening to this, you have a mom, right? And if you, you may be a mother listening to this show right now. Now, we are not, any of us, members of the Supreme Court. Thank goodness. I don't know if the three of us would be qualified to issue jurisprudence. A lot of mine would be
I don't think any of us have law degrees. I believe that's the very least the prerequisite, the minimum prerequisite.
Yeah, my credits don't carry to the U.S., I think. And all my rulings would weirdly reference quesadillas. But the issue...
They're all written on the backs of napkins and stuff.
Right, right, right. on the backs of the quesadillas. I keep eating them, you know. But the issue is here that the U.S. public, regardless of demographic, feels weirdly misled. And right now, what will happen, the primary consensus is, right now what will happen is an accelerating inequality. Like if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and if the right to choose what happens to your body becomes a matter of state rulings, then the people who have the means to travel to another state will simply continue to do so. This is the reason why people are advocating that overturning this ruling targets the poor.
But why? Why have a referendum on the poor? Why have, like, on a right that the poor have had? And I don't mean to writ large the poor. I just mean people less fortunate, people that don't have the means, same as people that, like, say, live in food deserts or, you know, areas where they don't have as many opportunities as far as education, like school districts and stuff like that. Like, what does that accomplish? Who's making money off of this? I don't get it. It just seems like an ideological overreach that is just going to hurt people that need it the most, who are going to... I saw a meme where it was like, you can't outlaw abortion, you can just outlaw safe abortion. So people that are having a child, or not to mention health concerns where carrying a child to term could literally kill you, they're going to find an abortion, whether it's in a back room somewhere or they do it themselves. But the people that actually can afford it are going to just go to California or New York or coastal, you know, places and get it done safely. This is going to affect people that are already in danger. I just don't understand how that's okay on any level. Just to make a point, just to make some point about what? Control? About God? What's it? I don't know, man.
I think it is ideological. It's religious. It feels that way a tiny bit. Maybe both of those smashed together. I was reading through just brief things that were written in the statement, Ben, like 90 something page opinion of the court. And it does appear like at least most of what I'm reading is an attempt to correct the legal record in the opinion of those who hold the majority opinion. Like when Roe v. Wade was considered by the court back then in 73, these people are saying it was considered incorrectly and the law was not, you know, taken into account in the right ways. It's a very weird record correcting kind of thing, it feels like. I do wonder how any rationally thinking person would not understand the problems that it causes when you abolish anything that humans will do
and have relied on for a long time. And again, nobody's like jumping at the bit to go out and get an abortion. Let's just put that out there right away. I mean, you know, we're obviously not women, but I guarantee no one's pumped to go out and get an abortion. No, it's something you do under duress, you know, or with a lot of consternation and a lot of serious soul searching, you know, or you're put in a situation out of your control where you were sexually assaulted and impregnated and you do not want that. You don't want to carry that child for obvious reasons. But I believe, who was it, Ben, that came out and said something about, like, it's about feeding the adoption pipeline? Have you heard that?
It is in the ruling.
It's weird. What a weird thing to say. What about adopting kids from other countries or, you know, that are like refugees or people that really need help? Like, do we need?
It's fatuous. A lot of the draft opinion, fatuous is just a fancy word meaning silly and pointless. So the reason we're bringing this up, and I know we're going long, the reason we're bringing this up is because if you're hearing this, you're going to also be hearing long running conspiracy theories, two of which we've outlined today. They are going to gain prominence as June not to be your conspiracy meteorologist here, but as June looms ever closer, you are going to hear both sides of these camps accelerating, right? Both the extremity and the strident nature of their beliefs. I would like to point out that at this juncture, that law, or that draft, rather, is not law yet. And obviously, again, statistically, regardless of what anybody may or may not believe, statistically, it's just a fact. The majority of the United States does not want Roe v. Wade to be overturned. There are a lot of bubbles happening now in the world of social media and communication. And, you know, honestly, these sorts of rulings would maybe be better received if they came hand in hand with support for people once they are born. But let us be clear, the same groups that want to remove those rights from people are the same groups who find it blasphemous to help children once they are born. So I'd like to end, since we're already going on, I'd like to end with a final word, not from your three pals over here at Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, but from a Methodist pastor, David Barnhart. I've quoted him before, and I cannot think of a better time to quote him now in full. Pastor Barnhart says, quote, "The unborn are a convenient group of people to advocate for. They never make demands of you. They are morally uncomplicated, unlike the incarcerated, addicted, or the chronically poor. They don't resent your condescension or complain that you are not politically correct. Unlike widows, they don't ask you to question patriarchy. Unlike orphans, they don't need money, education, or childcare. Unlike aliens, they don't bring all that racial, cultural, and religious baggage that you dislike. They allow you to feel good about yourself without any work at creating or maintaining relationships. And when they are born, you can forget about them because they cease to be unborn. You can love the unborn and advocate for them without substantially challenging your own wealth, power, or privilege, without reimagining social structures, apologizing, or making reparations to anyone. They are, in short, the perfect people to love if you want to claim you love Jesus, but actually dislike people who breathe. Prisoners, immigrants, the sick, the poor, widows, orphans, all the groups that are specifically mentioned in the Bible, they all get thrown under the bus for the unborn." Methodist pastor David Barnhart.
It ticks the boxes. I mean, it's totally true. It's a linchpin, or what do you call it? It's like a smokescreen. It's like, how can we build an argument on, you know, this rock solid, unimpeachable ground that is only there when it's convenient for us and has no bearing on what happens next. And we're immediately absolved of what happens next for that life, because we don't have to do anything once they're born. We just have to advocate for them to be born. And in the situation that we're now changing because of this potential change, this ruling, we're just shooting them out into a world of discord and chaos with no support, with no education, with no potential to better themselves. And it's just feeding a cycle that, I guess, if you really want to be conspiratorial about it, is in some way good for the haves, for there to be a continued recycling, you know, lower class that continues to be the backs off of which their wealth is built. I don't know. Maybe I'm overstating the case here, but
I think you're stating exactly the case that this preacher has just stated. And it's important to have that be the last word there. So we can't wait to hear what you think, folks. This is, again, live fire, right? We want to know whether you think there is a conspiracy afoot. If so, which? We want to know what you believe may be going down there in the Caribbean. We also want to know which misprints, typos, purposeful or accidental, you believe have played a role in history. If you would like to read more about that Methodist preacher, glad to share some resources, glad to tell you, but most importantly, we want to hear from you. and try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Twitter, the handle Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can also contact us other ways.
Yes, you can dial our number 1-833-STDWYTK. Just like, I don't know what I'm going to call this person. I'll call them just B for now. B called us and let us know that they are headed to Davos, you guys. They're going to go do some reporting.
B also wrote us an email.
And wants to know what they should cover. So I'm very interested in doing that. So like B, give us a call. 1-833-STDWYTK. Give yourself a cool nickname. Tell us if we can use your message on the air or not. And then you've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. If you've got more to say than can fit in that time, instead, send us a good old-fashioned email. You can put anything in there. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. And B, expect a message from me soon.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get 3 wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.